At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. We have a bonus episode of the podcast today, where it's Monday, day after the Super Bowl. We have Brian Curtis from The Ringer to discuss all things Super Bowl. Kevin Burkhardt, Greg Olson, Aaron Andrews, Mike Pereira, Fox's presentation, pregame show, halftime, and cover it all with Brian Curtis, who does a great job covering media for The Ringer. And we get into a couple of other little topics at the end. With Radio Row and the Michael Irvin situation, but the bulk of the pod is on Fox's telecast of the Super Bowl. We'll have another episode out for you later this week, as we usually do on Thursdays, so don't worry about that. And if you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media with Jimmy Traina podcast, check them out in the archives. We had Richard Deitch from The Athletic on last week, Chris Berman 2 weeks ago, Jason McCourty from Good Morning Football 3 weeks ago. So check those out. Subscribe to the pod, rate, and review. All right. Brian Curtis from The Ringer on Fox's coverage of Super Bowl 57, all right here on SI Media with Jimmy Traina. All right, joining me now for this special bonus episode of SI Media with Jimmy Traina is one of our regulars from The Ringer, editor at large, covers all thing media, the Press Box podcast, fresh off his Radio Row week with the phenomenal column, Brian Curtis. Brian, how's it going?
I don't know how fresh I am. Given, you know, 6 days on Radio Row and then the game last night, but yeah. I'm ready to rock, man. There's so much to talk about.
6 days on Radio Row?
I always go Sunday. That's a lot. See, I go Sunday. The real pros, you show up on Sunday when it's a room full of empty tables and it looks like we're all about to take an AP test. Cause then you get the lay of the land. I don't want to start, you know, at a standing start on Monday. I gotta be racing.
Well, I love your Radio Row column. We'll get into that a little bit later. We'll start with the Super Bowl with Fox doing their coverage. I wrote about it this morning. I gave them an A. I don't like giving grades, but you know, you sort of throw it out there as a online thing. What was your overall assessment of the Fox game broadcast?
Same. I thought they did really, really well last night. You know, it was funny, that very first Eagles drive in the first quarter, Kenneth Gainwell looks like he falls into the end zone, and which is a big moment, as you and I know, for gamblers. First yep. score at the Super Bowl. And what does Fox do? Almost immediately puts up that great shot of Kenneth Gainwell's arm looking like he's about to be in an arm wrestling contest just short of the goal line. Yep. And again, it's a small thing. It's a thing that probably washes over the heads of most people watching the Super Bowl. But you're just like, that's why these guys are really good, right? Yeah. Not only do they have that shot, they have that shot immediately. And it's like, oh, not a touchdown. Let's get Jalen Hurts the first TD of the Super Bowl. I thought the production-wise was really, really good last night.
I agree. You know, I have to say, from network to network, the production always seems pretty – I rarely have major issues with the production. But they did – listen, everything you needed last night. They got screwed on – the one non-pass interference call on Bradberry and Schuster in the second quarter where there was someone blocking sort of the view of the penalty, but there's nothing really they can do about that. And here's the other thing. Things move so fast during that game, it feels like. I mean, the day feels so slow and the buildup feels so slow. But once they actually kick off, everything feels like it's moving so fast, and I think it's hard to get everything in because they've got so much to do. Go ahead.
And to that point, if you noticed last night, the Eagles, especially in the first half, were racing to the line of scrimmage after every play. The Chiefs started doing that in the second half. That makes everybody's job on the broadcast so much harder because there's not a lot of time to breathe. There's not a lot of time to think. There's not a lot of time to show replays. So that game felt like it was in fast forward last night because it was in fast forward.
That's a great point. Really is. Everyone is bowing down to Burkhart and Olsen, and I'm sure we'll do it too. I'm going to start because I have to be a negative Nelly. I'm going to start with the only criticism I have, and it's so minor, but I had to just throw one thing out there because you watch that game. There was really nothing there, I think, that you could have criticized. The only thing, and it, again, and maybe the fact that things move so fast is why it didn't happen. I just would have liked a little more on everyone slipping because that became a big theme. And with Olsen being a former player, I thought he could have really offered some good perspective there on, not, you know, he could have went into the cleats and the grass and what's going on, but I also would have loved the mentality of, does a player get frustrated when he's slipping? What does a lineman have to do differently? Other than that, I can't think of anything negative. Well, Mike Pereira and the rules analyst thing, we'll get into that. But in terms of Burkhart and Olsen, I thought other than that, they really were just perfect the whole night.
It's interesting about Olsen because watching him all year, he is Mr. Strategy, go for it on fourth down guy. He had McKinnon sliding short of the end zone last night. He knows exactly what's happening in all those cases. When they have set him up to talk about what it was like to be an NFL player, I find that's often stuff he is not especially great at.
Okay.
It's really interesting. Like there have been other moments. I think Burkhart, maybe it was the NFC Championship game because Olsen played in one and played in the Super Bowl too. And he was like, what does it feel like to make the Super Bowl? And also just had a fine answer, very unmemorable. And it was like, weirdly, that's the thing. Often with young announcers, that's the one thing they can talk about is what does it feel like to play football?
Yep.
I feel Olsen is much more comfortable talking about X's and O's and strategy and showing you why Patrick Mahomes does this on an RPO than he is on talking about the game. Yeah. Totally agree with your overall assessment, though. It was interesting to me because it felt like two guys doing their first Super Bowl, not in the sense that they were nervous, but in the sense that they were very cognizant of not putting too many fingerprints on the game. They were laying back a little bit, calling the game, doing the analysis, but also not overdoing it. It felt like two rookies in that sense, where they were very, you know, aware. This is our first game.
Yeah.
Don't try to do too much. Leave it at that.
Yeah. Listen, there. I can understand why people may want some hype and maybe some over-the-topness for the Super Bowl, since it's the Super Bowl. But I think if you are any play-by-play guy, an analyst or woman, it's smart to call that game like you're calling week 6, 1 o'clock, you know, Carolina at the Rams. Like, people don't want to be screamed at and told everything is great. You have to really pick your spots with that. You can't do it constantly. And I thought they somehow have managed to do that. They know when to do it. I mean, they know when to do it, and they do it perfectly.
We tried the other approach in the AFC Championship game 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Where we were told every play was the biggest play of the season. And every time Chris Jones did anything, that great players make big plays in big games. And it was incredibly annoying.
Yeah.
And well, I think you're absolutely right. The Super Bowl and Fox are going to hype itself.
Yeah.
So you could sit there. And again, you want to meet the moment, right? You want to make sure that people know just how big these plays are by giving a little bit of extra in your voice and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But you don't need to do a ton. You really don't.
I've written through the rise of Burkhart and Olsen that for me, you know, I think there are very intelligent writers out there like yourself who come at this from a very cerebral approach. And I'm just a very basic, dumb person. So my thing is just don't annoy me. Just don't annoy me. That's all I ask. And they don't annoy me at all. And when I was watching the game last night and, you know, the tweets are pouring in, everyone loving Olsen and I kept saying, I kept trying to think to myself, what is it? What are they doing? And then it hit me and it's so simple and basic and sounds like, you know, a fifth grader could come up with this, but they never say anything stupid on a broadcast. Mm-hmm. Never. I don't want to point out other people and this, and it feels like every word they say means something and there's nothing superfluous. But on top of that, they don't say anything where you're like, oh my God, what that was. Actually, Burkett had one minor thing I'll get to with where he praised Pereira, but I don't look at that as sort of game commentary. That's, you know, they're friends and business, but they don't say stupid things. That's really, I think, what it comes down to for them almost.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we live in this world where the Twitter scoreboard is often how many things did you say that just made Twitter erupt?
Right.
Romo's score was 1 million during the AFC Championship game.
Right.
And these guys, you're right. That score is really low.
Right.
And it's funny because I was thinking about Burkhart last night. I was saying this to my co-host, David Shoemaker. It feels like the next thing for him is going to be to really put his fingerprints on the game a little bit more, to make a little more Kevin Burkhart-ness appear in a game. You know how Joe Buck did that? Joe Buck started out.
Sure.
He's really good at calling football. And it took a while for him to be like, you know what? I'm going to call the game just like I always did, but I'm also going to put a little Joe Buck in here. So you know exactly who this is. I think that's going to be Kevin Burkhart's next frontier, right? It's just putting a little more of himself onto the game. And I think that comes with being comfortable, being confident, making it your job. You know, you're not a rookie anymore. It's your job. You're not going to get, you're not going to get fired. You're good. But you're right. The approach this year resulted in Twitter not complaining about them, which is something.
Right. You really summed it up perfectly about, you know, there's no Twitter. What was the word you used? Twitter.
Eruptions, I can't believe I can't. What I just,
there's no Twitter. They don't cause any Twitter eruptions. That's really, that was the perfect way to put it. And I'll say this too, to piggyback off your point, and I agree with you 100%. Just as an example, there was a moment during the NFC title game where they're doing the, you know, the promotion and the pump up for Rihanna for the Super Bowl. And Burkhart, you know, sort of says, makes a joke about how Olsen was singing a bunch of Rihanna songs in their car ride the other day. And then, you know, they sort of moved on. And I'm sitting there like, yeah, you need to name the songs or like, you know, tell, you know, ask Kevin, what's your favorite? And I get they don't want to do it. They're in the middle of the NFC title game. But like, those little things here and there, I think, would go a long way. But, you know, avoiding the Twitter eruption is a very good way of putting what they do so well in words there. A couple of just random notes I took during the game, and then I'll just throw it out there to you. You know, it's so far, everyone wants the Super Bowl to be on Saturday, or they want it pushed. So with President's Day, everyone wants to be off on Monday. Nobody wants to go to work on the Monday. And the NFL has been really, really good about keeping that game at like 6:30 and ending at a reason. That kick last night was 6:44. And I wonder if there's going to maybe be a push to have that. Because obviously, you know this, as soon as you get into that 10, 11 o'clock, the rating goes higher and higher. I really hope this is not a trend, because they never kicked. It was supposed to be a 6:30 kick or 6:32. It was 6:44.
It was interesting too, because Burkhart had this little line, you noticed, right before there. He goes, well, I guess we might as well kick it off. And that felt a little Bob Costas, a little Marv Albert to me. Just a little wink at the viewer, like, you know, it's been a long pregame to get here, so let's play football.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because I wrote that down, that he did do that. And then also Fox debuted a new score bug, which, you know, the nerds like us love. Here's my thing. The only thing I would say, like, I thought it was fine. I like that they finally, the old score bug, and maybe I know other people thought this, they used to put the football next to the score to indicate which team had the ball, but it looked like the team had negative points with the football wasn't round enough. So there were people on Twitter be like, why is the score -6-0? So that's gone. We don't have that anymore from Fox.
That's really funny. I was watching the score bug Twitter last night. And I was like, I'm as nerdy as it gets, just like you are about all this stuff. Yeah. It's like, man, that might be where I tap out. It's like having strong opinions about the score bug.
Well, it's funny. When I tweeted my column a couple of times today, reviewing the broadcast, talk about, like, why do you care about this? The only complaint I saw from people back to me about Burkhart and Olsen was they were annoyed that I didn't even pay attention to it, but I guess Burkhart said something very kind about Rupert Murdoch and Elon Musk when they were showed on television. I think a lot of people don't realize that Rupert Murdoch at the end of the day is Kevin Burkhart's boss.
Yeah.
So he's going to throw in a line about whatever it was, but
Yeah, I think he said something about great mind, couple of great minds in the box or whatever it was.
Right.
Yeah. The must thing, I think, was, you know,
yeah.
To talk about something that causes Twitter eruption. I mean, he is a Twitter eruption himself.
You are not allowed to praise Elon Musk these days. So,
that was funny.
And I also thought it was smart. I felt like I think a lot of people expected Fox to give us a lot of Donna Kelsey on the broadcast, but they really just did the one shot where she was sitting with Goodell and Damar Hamlin. They sort of kept that during the game to a minimum, which I think was smart.
That was really nice. And of course, that's one of the things about having a 5.5 hour pregame show or whatever it was. We can just get that out of the way.
Yeah.
For those who have not been just, you know, beaten with that whole sort of weeks and weeks and weeks. It's like, okay, we got it. It's out there. Let's move on.
Yeah, it's I would love to know what goes through producers' minds. Like, do they think people don't know this story? Do they think people want more? But man, they flood the zone with that story.
Well, this is the trick, right? And then you and I have relatives like this. There are 100 million people ish watching the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And a lot of people, and I am related to several of them, have no idea that there are two brothers playing in the Super Bowl when they sit down to watch it. When I was talking to my wife last night, she did not know that. And she was like, oh, wow, that's interesting. Has that ever happened before? And I'm like, let me tell you a story, because I've now heard this 100 times over the last 2 weeks.
Yes,
so
you have.
You are calculating for people like you and me and big football fans. And then you're calculating for people who are just like, what's going on here? Super Bowl, I'm in. I don't know the stories.
It is, you know, I've always said this. I mean, going back to my old hot clicks days, like, we're so in the bubble and we think everyone is in the bubble with us. And, you know, I had one of my best friends texted me last night out of the blue, and he's like, Greg Olson, I he's really good. I like him a lot. And I'm just like, yeah, this has been like for a month now. Where have you been? Like, you know, and we think everyone's in the bubble, and, you know, it's just not the case.
Yeah. Normal people don't think about announcers. I mean, that's one of the weird parts of our job. And then you're like, oh, that announcer is really good. And I'm like, sure. Yeah. That guy. Okay, fine.
Now I've been ranting and raving about this like a lunatic for a long time. And I get some people tell me like, you're beating a dead horse, give it up. And then I get other people like, talk about it more. So I never know what to do, but we need to get into the rules analyst situation here in Mike Pereira. I think the rules analyst across the board is the most overrated thing in sports broadcasting. So that's my stance on it. Last night, there were two things that stuck out to me. Now, I'll say this. I wrote a big column about it after the title games, because CBS, they go to Gene Steratore every 30 seconds, and it takes over the game. It ruins the flow. And I wrote this. Fox goes to Pereira sparringly, which is much better. The problem with Pereira is he will never say the refs are wrong. He will never, ever say the refs are wrong. So there were three things last night. The first thing was, you mentioned the Gainwell play in the beginning with the elbow, where everyone who was watching the game saw it. I don't know why they have to bring in Pereira to say his elbow was short of the goal line, when if you have eyesight, you know that. There's no need to bring him in there. There's no need. So that's my little pet peeve there. Am I a lunatic for that opinion?
No, it's like the thing NBC did for years on Sunday Night Football. Remember, they're like, we have somebody to interpret the rules. His name is Chris Collinsworth. And for most of these, he can just do it himself.
Right. Yep. And then the second thing, on the Devonta Smith catch on the sideline with the helmet, he came on, spoke for 5 straight minutes, big word salad. I had no idea what he was talking about. And I don't understand the rule. I would be less annoyed by all the rules analysts if one of them could just come on and go, you know what? This is really hard to see what's going on here. I have no idea what they're going to call or what the right call is. Mm-hmm. The cops will not come handcuff you and take you to jail if you say that. You are allowed to say that. Just say that. Instead, it's third leg and the movement and this. That's not serving the viewer in any way, shape, or form. Just say, I don't know what the call should be here.
Totally. And that was one. It was so weird because we looked at how many times we look at that. I have no idea what the right call should have been on that play. And I thought the best piece of analysis was actually Olsen being like, the Kansas City Chiefs are moving back to the old line of scrimmage. Because this is literally what's happening. Like, let's just wait and watch the players, because they're going to get word before we do. And then, of course, it wound up the players going to apparently 3 different lines of scrimmage, the old one, the new one, and then back to the old one. But yeah, it was a weird
But
one.
Just talking nonstop through all the replays and saying nothing, it doesn't just say, I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea what's going on here. That's all.
Can I ask you one thing about this? And you may be about to get to this, but do we like the fact that Fox and Olsen are not treating their referee in the booth like this authority figure who can never be wrong. And that Olsen, anytime during the season, is like, Mike Pereira, you are saying this, but I actually just totally disagree with you.
Right. So that's where we, so that was the third sort of nugget here was obviously the play that everyone's talking about, the holding there at the end with Bradbury, where Olsen and Pereira, of course, Pereira comes on and says the ref's right, because he's never going to say they're wrong. And I thought Olsen made a good point about the moment when you call it, is it really affecting the play? Now, what he did there, now it's interesting there, because I could see, you know, there are some people, if Olsen did that and you're Pereira, you probably want to knock him out a little bit because he's sort of throwing him under the bus. And then that whole thing becomes a mess because Bradbury says he was holding him.
Yes.
So that, and then here you have the biggest game of the year, the Super Bowl, everyone's watching, you have great teams, it's coming down to the wire, and it's all about the refs and the call. It's unbelievable.
So what's interesting is they let, and I assume encouraged, Olsen and Pereira to spar a little bit about, very friendly terms, all year about calls.
Yeah.
Which I like, because remember when CBS, who was the last CBS ref who they had to...
Not poor Mike Carey.
No, the one that was always wrong. They would treat him as an authority figure.
Mike Carey.
Always wrong. Yeah, Mike Carey. And it was kind
of
like
some of the greatest television in the history of sports.
It was amazing. If you love awkward television, that was your thing.
It was.
It's funny because we don't treat the referees on the field as infallible. So why would we treat the referee sitting next to us as infallible? Right. And I do like it that they're able to kind of, and in that moment, I thought it was totally fine, whether I agree with them or not. I thought it was totally fine for Olsen to come back and say, like, you may be right, but like, why are they making this call right now? It did, to me, it did not. I think in theory, I would think that would be actually really bad in the last 2 minutes of the Super Bowl, but I thought it worked fine last night. I do like that they can have a dialogue about it and be like, dude, really? That's holding or that's pass interference?
Right, right. The interesting is, I mentioned it, the same exact play happened in the second quarter where they didn't throw the flag.
Yeah.
And there was an obvious grab. Then they throw the flag. So it's that inconsistency that's a problem. But like you said, I like that they go back and forth. I just wish Pereira would sometimes acknowledge that the refs, you know, all Pereira is there, he's just focused on the fact that Bradbury had yanked the jersey. And Olsen's point about, did he impede the play? Did it really affect the play? The timing of it, are you going to make that call? Now, and what's interesting, you pointed out about Olsen's take on that. If you follow all of the football NFL players, past and present, that I follow, all said, like, how do you call it in that moment? Pereira should speak to that a little bit, I think. But, he, you know, it's not going to happen.
It is. And I do think, if I have sympathy for the refs, and I usually don't, I think it's a tough job to be like, we want you to make great calls all game, to be excellent for 58 minutes. And then in the last 2 minutes, we want you to be slightly less than great because it complies with whatever storylines we want to happen right now. Like we want, even us neutral people, right, want Jalen Hurts to get the ball back one more time and then have a chance to win or tie the game. Like, I think that's a tough job to just sort of like read everybody's minds. And I totally understand calling plays like that in the last 2 minutes. You know, I'm sure I had that reaction in the moment, but I'm also just like, really? Like, and that's what, and you and I can talk about this too in a minute, but like, I feel talk show people have just been tying themselves in knots this morning about this.
Well, because it's, I mean, you summed it up with the Pereira Olsen discussion. It's, did he hold him? Yes. Should it be called there? No. And that's a tough way for I'll admit, as much as I bash the refs, that's a tough way for the refs to have to do their job. And
it
then,
is.
Like you said, and then talk shows. Are arguing, I guess, those two things. And it's like, there's no answer there, I think.
Well, and also, as you mentioned earlier, James Bradbury stood in his locker and said, I held him. I wish the ref hadn't called. I hope the ref wouldn't call it, but it was a penalty.
Right.
So it's like, well, then what are we talking about at this point? It was like, it was kind of a penalty. The guy who it was called on thinks it's a penalty. So who are we talking on behalf of at this point? Ourselves, because we wanted one more drive and what was otherwise a really fantastic Super Bowl for 58 minutes, I guess.
Yeah,
that's a storyline. Okay, but you know.
Yeah, I think it's all for us, 100%. And, you know, Tom Brady said this on his podcast, on his Sirius XM radio show 2 or 3 weeks ago. Now, he was talking about line play, not on a pass, but he said there's holding on every play. Just a matter of, are they going to call it, how egregious, et cetera. Now, maybe if you talk to NFL players, that philosophy, I mean, you said it there. Bradbury said, I held them. I was hoping they wouldn't call it. I think the players, from everything I'm seeing now, are really thinking like, okay, fourth quarter, a minute left, they're not going to call it. I'll do a little tug. It does seem like the situation of the game is in the heads of the players.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the refs.
Again, I wonder if that's the players talking or if that's all of us as a football watching society having heard announcers for 40 plus years go, you can't make that call in the last 2 minutes of the game.
Right.
Like, we've heard people say that for over and over. Why can't you do that again? I mean, the Joseph Osai thing against Patrick Mahomes in the NFC Championship game was another one. It's like, well, it was clearly a late hit. Like, I don't know what do we want. And if it was our team, if I actually had a stake in that game, would I not want them to call that penalty if I were a Chiefs fan, if the Dallas Cowboys were in that moment? Like, of course I would want them to call it. Be like, oh, great, Super Bowl, game over. Thank you, referees, for daring to get it right, no matter what anybody says.
It's funny you bring that one up, because when that happened, I had zero problems with that call. It was clear what he did. I tweeted, if that play happens in the NFL in preseason, week one, week five, playoff, Super Bowl, they're calling that penalty. There's under no circumstances where they wouldn't call that penalty. And then last night when they called the penalty on Bradbury, I was like, like, you see, you know, you, I want to see the replay. You see it. And they still, after the replay, I'm like, I don't know what you do there. Like, do you, you know, I get it. He held them, but the situation. So
it was, closer,
I guess.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess you just, you take it on a case by case basis, I think, which you can't do if you're a ref. You got to, these are the rules and this is what it is.
One interesting piece of evidence from last night is, if you remember the last two Chiefs drives before that, what happened on their scoring plays? They had wide receivers wide open walking into the end zone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they called plays. And then,
designed to.
Then the third time was they did not have a wide receiver wide open in the end zone because there was at least a minimal tug. So that probably is evidence we should consider when, you know, whether that was a penalty or not.
Another aspect of the game we should touch upon is Mahomes and the ankle. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I thought he was done. I thought he was done. The way he came off that field, he was done.
The way and his then, head was on the coach's shoulder on the bench?
Exactly. I
that
went
was
live
a great
bet,
shot, by
I
the
went
way.
Live bet the Eagles, sons of bitches. And and then, you know, halftime comes and Rihanna, and like no one's talking about, and I'm just like, what's going on with his ankle? Like, I like Rihanna. It's a good show. Can I get something on the ankle? And then the second half starts. Erin Andrews comes on. I thought she did a nice job of throwing Andy under the bus a little bit there, saying
that
Andy, which I didn't know. I don't know. I'd love to know if you knew that Andy Reid does not speak to the reporter at halftime if the Chiefs are losing. Did you know that?
No. And it's really strange to me. Like,
wait, really strange.
If you're winning, if we're winning, I'll talk to you. Yeah. Or if it's tied, I'll talk to you, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why we couldn't get anything on Mahomes, because, and I'm glad Aaron revealed that, because I thought that was interesting, because I kept saying, you know, what's the word on Mahomes? And then he comes out and it was like nothing happened. And then it's getting so lost in the shuffle because of the Bradbury penalty. But right before that, he scrambled for like 40 yards. And I'm like, the guy had no ankle an hour ago. What happened? You know, and Jimmy Johnson at halftime is like, well, they'll give him some medication.
Yeah.
But then today, we're taping this on Monday, someone came out with a report, who I forgot who it was, but it's a legit person said, the Chiefs gave him nothing at halftime. Really? Then what the hell happened last night? Maybe there is a script.
It was funny how we did this three times. Did it against the Jags. We did it against the Bengals, and then we did it last night. We're like, oh, I don't know about Patrick Mahomes and that ankle. And then it's like, yeah, never mind. It's fine.
Yeah.
He's really good. He's still Patrick Mahomes, the MVP. By the way, did you love Travis Kelce after the game? Everybody wrote off the Chiefs. They didn't give us a chance. Like, come on. Seriously? And I had people in my mentions today. I was making fun of it, being like, well, you know, a lot of people didn't have them winning the West. Like, come on, man. Like, seriously, they've had how many home AFC championship games in a row?
The only thing I would say here to defend Travis Kelce is I did wonder if he was talking about, and I don't know how locked in these guys are before game, but everyone on Fox, 6 out of 6, picked the Eagles.
Yeah.
And I tweeted that, and someone replied to me and sent me a screen grab from NFL Network in the morning where they all picked the Eagles. So I wonder if that's what he was referring to. For him to say, like, no one thought they'd win the West. No one thought they'd come out of the AFC. I mean, listen, there was a lot of hype around Burrow and Allen and all that, and I get it. Sure. But
the Chargers, people like, you know, the Broncos. Yeah. Before the Broncos cratered, everybody's like, I don't know. Could they win it with Russell Wilson?
I wonder if he meant in this, because everyone picked the Eagles. Everyone was picking the Eagles. So I wonder if that's what he meant.
Well, these guys are so good at finding, like, the one shred of doubt.
Yeah.
Pretending that the whole world is against the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Right. And there was, you're right, there was just enough. Well, Terry Bradshaw picked the Eagles. Well, the mayor of Cincinnati was making fun of us, you know, and it's like, you are the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes is the MVP of the league. But that's how players work. And hey, it worked.
Yeah. I had a feeling that with Cincinnati, that stuff was going to come back to bite Cincinnati with the Burrowhead and the Chiefs stayed very quiet. And I listened to Kelce's podcast and he had made a couple of like offhand mentions about Burrowhead. So I was like, yeah, that's going to be used as motivation in terms of like, no one picked the Chiefs. No one thought the Chiefs could win. I don't know where, like I said, unless they were looking at the pregame shows before the Super Bowl, I don't know where any of that came from. That was,
no, ESPN noted the other day before the AFC Championship game, they had been favored in 14 consecutive playoff games in a row. 14. Wow. So, you know.
There were a lot of great little stats. There was the stat about the MVP never won this and the coin toss never, and a lot of it all got fizzled out last night, which I hate those trends. So I was glad to see that. You mentioned the name Terry Bradshaw.
Okay.
Now, When I saw them getting ready for the trophy thing, which I don't really pay all that much attention to because I always find it useless. The thought I had in my head, I tweeted this as well, but I said it to myself. I said, I like Terry Bradshaw. I have no issue with Terry Bradshaw. And I don't want to be an ageist. I hate that when people are ageist. But I did say to myself, you know, Terry's got a certain kind of personality and he's at a certain stage of his career. I'm like, this network has Kurt Menefee, Strahan, Aaron Andrews, Tom Rinaldi, and Kevin Burkhart. You can even throw in Schrager, Glazer, 7 people right there who are all there. Is that the person who should be doing the trophy presentation? And then I guess he's making a bunch of fat jokes about Andy Reid, which I didn't take as a big deal because I think they're friends and I think Andy has a good sense of humor about it. And I'm a fat person and I get it. Fat people make fun of fat people together because Terry's not exactly slim.
Waddle on over here, Andy. That's what he said.
That was funny. I'm sorry. That was funny. And people getting all upset at what's the awful thing they do on the Monday at media night? Someone asked Andy Reid his philosophy for having a happy life. And he said, Hawaiian shirts, cheeseburgers, and something else. So I don't think Andy Reid was offended by Terry saying, go have a double cheeseburger. But I don't know. Give me your stance on the trophy presentation.
It definitely makes for really crazy TV. And I thought this one was actually less weird than Terry freestyling after the NFC Championship game. Do you remember that? Where he was out on that stage. The other game was about to start, but he was out on the stage. Probably, he'd be like, all right, Jeffrey Lurie, get in here. And he'd ask him one question and be like, all right, get out of here. Nick Sirianni, get out of here. And then he made Jalen Hurts sing Fly, Eagles Fly to the whole
thing. Oh, right.
Which was just like, wait, what is – and Jalen did it to his credit, like sang the whole song. Not one stanza, but like the whole song.
Right. Terry, that's probably –
so again, as a fan of like weird TV, just sending Terry out and being like, dude, just go out and freestyle. Like it's all like, there's no script here.
That's
amazing.
That's probably why Fox has him do it. I don't pay close attention to that because like I said, there's nothing usually come out of it. But someone sent me a funny tweet and said that when Bradshaw was interviewing Kelce and Kelce was going on what you pointed out earlier, ranting about everyone picking them to lose. And Terry slips in those lowlifes. That's funny. I mean, that's funny. That's good stuff there. But I just think you have like these really, they have so many professional trophy presentation people they can use. And yeah, they still use Terry. It's an interesting choice. But as you
say, it's so boring normally, and it's kind of the worst part of a big game, that injecting like a little danger into it is not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. We got to talk about Radio Row before I let you go. Anything you want to mention? Anything we didn't cover here about the Super Bowl? How much of the pregame did you watch?
I came in and out. So I would watch the, there were some like awkward gambling moments where it's like, we have to talk about gambling. So we're going to ask Michael Strahan about his parlays or whatever. I was like, is this really the right segment for this? There was the patriotism minute. Did you watch that where Fox was had Johnny Cash's ragged old flag?
Was that, had, okay. Like, so I came in, I put it on at about 5:30, and there was some weird thing going on. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah,
that
must like have been a whole, what it was. Like, let's talk about being an American segment. That was a thing. Yeah,
that's bizarre.
That was interesting. I'm trying to think what else. They also had that thing where they were introducing the starting lineups, and the players were like walking out on what looked like either a concert stage or a fashion runway walk.
With DJ Khaled.
Yeah.
That was horrific.
I was like, what?
Yeah, that was bad.
This?
That was really bad. I agree. And then there was the Jeter moment.
Okay, so that was interesting too. And to me, I feel almost exactly about Jeter like I do about Tom Brady. There's some definite doubts whether Derek Jeter will ever say anything interesting on TV. But I think do you hire him? Absolutely you do and take that chance.
Right.
He's Derek Jeter. Of course you hire Derek Jeter, you know.
I think Tom Brady will be way, way, way better than Derek Jeter. And this comes from like Derek Jeter's number one fanboy. Listen, if you watch the Jeter documentary on ESPN, what was it called? The Captain or whatever, like with 18 parts. Uh-huh. He literally is on there saying, I went out of my way never to say anything to you guys. And now it's, come join us.
And I'm still going to do it, even though they have this documentary.
Right.
And Yeah, there was the Jeter A-Rod. A-Rod came out. I was like, oh my God, does A-Rod have to be part of this too? Please, no.
Nobody knows how to promote their stars better than Fox. I'll say that.
No, and they're smart. It's like big stars. Like Derek Jeter, it's like, of course we're going to bring him out. The weird thing is that Tom Brady was just kind of not there.
Tom is taking a break, I guess. I wrote that whole column today. Purposely didn't want to mention Tom Brady because I feel like it's been done to death. But and I talked about this with Deitch heavily last week, and I have to keep talking about it because it just keeps happening. The rise and emergence of Olsen is going to make, and I used wrestling terms, Tom Brady's going to come into this as a heel. It's going to be very rough for Tom and Fox because if what's gone on with Olsen makes Brady the bad guy here. And I don't think he wants to be the bad guy. He certainly doesn't need to be the bad guy. He's won 7 Super Bowls. He's got all this money. I mean, at some point he might just say, fuck this. He doesn't need to be the heel. And he's going to be the heel in this whole situation.
So two things about that. I still think there's a fairly reasonable shot that Tom Brady never calls a game for Fox. That this whole year is not just preparing for him to be an announcer, but it's him just spending a year trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life and finding another way to make tons and tons of money that is not calling games for Fox. And I still think that could happen. I think Fox really wants him and is planning on him showing up in 2024, but I think that's at least the possibility. Here's my other thing though. You and I totally think that, but going back to the thing about the way we watch a telecast versus the way normal, well-adjusted human beings watch a telecast.
Right.
My mom does not know who Greg Olsen is. But if you're like Tom Brady, Tom Brady, nice Tom Brady, the golden boy. Yes. There will be a lot of that. You know, there will be aggrieved sports media critics. I know that. I imagine that. I really like Greg Olsen, but I just like, there'll be a lot of the regular people who are just like, I cannot wait to see Tom Brady on television. And I'm not
100% right.
Knocked out this tight end that I only know about from, you know.
I will say, you know, no one needs to, you know, defend Tom Brady, but I'm going to defend them from this standpoint. What I don't like it, you know, like I said earlier, I tweet out the column with a review and I say, Olsen, you know, hit it out of the park. And I get all these tweets from people like Brady better not go near the booth and they better not use Brady and F Brady. And this. you still got to see if he can be good. Like, I understand that there are a lot of people who don't think he's going to be good and they think he doesn't have a personality and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I'm of the belief that if he's taking a year off, now you say he's never going to do it. Okay.
No, I said that's on the board. It's on the board.
It's on the board. My thing is, if he is going to do it, if he's going to go through it, he's not even going there and embarrass himself. He's going to try. Now, whether someone thinks he's good or not, that's up to the individual. But I don't like the theory of he shouldn't even try. Fox shouldn't. Like, I want to see what he's going to be like in the booth.
No. And to me, if I'm running a network, I want guys like Greg Olson, who are like the unexpected A guy, announcer who really turns into this great prospect out of nowhere, basically, right. Or let's say not out of nowhere, but, you know, not the on top of your list. But you know what I also want to try? The most famous football players in history. Like, yes, I want to see if they're great announcers. If he turns into Joe Montana, that's great. You know what's going to happen in 2 years? Somebody's going to hire Aaron Rodgers and put him on either a pregame show or a big game. And of course you want to see if Aaron Rodgers is great at broadcasting. Like, of course.
I agree. Like,
it's stupid not to.
Yep. Like you said, that the Tom Brady hire goes beyond you and I watching a football game on Fox at 4:25 in week 8. That is about the people who don't care about football, who know the name Tom Brady. That's what that's about. All right. So now we covered the Super Bowl. Now you spent 6 days on Radio Row. Hopefully the Ringer has hazard pay for you.
Yeah.
And this is so for people who don't know who are listening, Brian goes to Radio Row every year and he writes a little column that's phenomenal about what takes place, and he has these theories about who's a Wednesday guest and a Thursday guest because
this is proven.
It's proven. All these people descend upon Radio Row and they do 500 radio shows, and everyone gives, they go on every station like a conveyor belt, and no one says anything ever. And it happens every year. And what I loved about this year's column is we got him, Carrot Top.
Yeah.
Doing Radio Row.
Tuesday guy. And he was actually the perfect Tuesday guy. So the people don't know, the guests get better later in the week. And the whole thing for the PR people leading the guests around is to get your guest on the best day. Because if like all these famous NFL quarterbacks, Justin Fields is there on Thursday, you don't want to bring Carrot Top on Thursday because he's not going to be. But Carrot Top showing up on Tuesday, he could have done any show he wanted to do.
Now, who were the big Friday guests this year?
Well, so my theory, as you put it, Jimmy, is that the guests actually peak on Thursday. And they go a slight notch down on Friday because people want to leave town.
Right.
They want to go to big parties Thursday night, and then they fly out Friday morning. So it was like Gronk was huge, Justin Fields, Joe Montana. I tell you what, and this might have actually been the biggest guest, Stephen A. Smith was there. And you know what? Like, if you can get
10 minutes
with Stephen A. Smith or 10 minutes with Joe Montana – how many radio hosts are really taking Joe Montana in that trade? Nothing against Joe Cool, but you know,
right.
Stephen A.
had a book to promote.
He did. He's also promoting other stuff, but that was definitely a big one on Thursday. He was a Thursday.
Yeah. So in addition to who's a Wednesday guy, Thursday guy, I'm always fascinated by the guy who will go on 764 shows in one day. Like Debo Samuel one day, I think, was on every single radio show that exists. Christian McCaffrey was on every single radio show that exists. It's just, and you know, I'll follow some of the show accounts on Twitter who I like, you know, so we've got, God, I'm saying, you know, so much. I'm such a bad podcaster. I just realized it in my head. So it'll be ESPN's Get Up. Join us for Debo Samuel. 10 minutes later, I'm following, you know, WFAN. Follow us for Debo Samuel on Boomer and Geo. Then it's Pat McAfee. Follow us for Debo Samuel on, and then it's Dan Levitard. We have Debo Samuel. It goes, and I'm like, why are you doing this? I don't get it.
And just remember to all the people at home, these shows are not in San Francisco that are having Debo Samuel on, or they're not national shows, a lot of them. This is like Debo Samuel going on in Tampa, you know, and you're just like, if I'm sitting there, I'm a huge Bucks fan, and here is 10 minutes with Debo Samuel. Well, that's kind of cool, but it's also kind of random as a part of my radio day. Yeah, that was a weird one. I'll tell you what, the one I saw, Jim McMahon was there. Jim McMahon is on Radio Row every year. He's a very frequent visitor to the Row. He did 6.5 hours of radio. 6.5 hours on Wednesday. And Jim McMahon's bit was, I don't watch football anymore. So like You could do 85 bears.
Oh my
You could do
God.
whatever he was promoting. But beyond that, like somebody, it was a hilarious moment where a Chicago reporter came up and said, "Hey, Jim, what do you think of Justin Fields? You know, get a quote from the great Jim McMahon." And he was like, "I don't watch football and I have no opinion." And so you're
I
like,
don't watch
well,
football, but here I am at Radio Row.
You can't talk about Justin Fields.
Okay, so here's the question. So you said Jim McMahon did 6.5 hours straight radio interviews. Do you remember what he was plugging?
Not totally offhand.
There you go.
I mean, I was not sitting in on all of those, but yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
Some of the guys are carrying around boards and, you know, like games and stuff like that, which was all very, it's just, I mean, it's so, and again, you and I say this as huge fans of sports radio, genuine fans of the medium that is sports radio. And I tell you, one of the coolest parts is you walk around that room and you see everybody. Only Colin Cowherd and Dan Patrick kind of opt out of Radio Row. Like they're doing their shows in Phoenix, but not there.
Right.
But Jim Rome's there. Your guy Mad Dog's there. You know, Mike Felger from Boston is there. The number one station in Dallas. The Ticket is there. Like everybody's there.
And I also heard that
Pat McAfee.
Well, I heard one of the interesting things too is all of these now legalized gambling companies that have shows, have massive space at Radio Row. Who would have ever thunk that?
That was a big change. So it used to be like, you know, Fox Sports Radio would just have a big stage for people to come up and do their show. But now it's the gambling companies also have it. So you got CBS Radio. By the way, Boomer and Gio were there this year. They had to, which is getting up very, very early in Phoenix to do their show. But I thought that was interesting.
Well, that's what kept fascinating about it, because I listen to Boomer and Gio and I watch Good Morning Football in the mornings. I go back and forth depending on what's going on. And I have this weird thing where I'm just like, you know, I get fascinated by the minutia like Larry David. I'm just like, Boomer and Gio doing their show at 3 o'clock in the morning, Arizona time. Like, I would have stayed home. Like, well, I don't. It's 3 o'clock in the morning in Arizona and they're interviewing Anthony Munoz. Like,
that's hilarious. That's the funniest one to me. Anthony Munoz was a Tuesday guy this year, if I remember right.
Yeah.
That's another one. So if you're in Dallas and you're getting like 10 minutes of Anthony Munoz, again, nothing against Anthony Munoz, but like, what?
Right. Did you speak to Mad Dog at all?
We sat down. I have like a, this is, you know, like, again, I defer to you as the Mad Dog bureau chief.
Yeah,
of sports media, because you're on it whenever he has a great rant about Super Bowl trivia and all that stuff. Yeah. But I always like try to carve out 15 minutes to take a microphone backstage at the Sirius has a whole compound on Radio Row, which is kind of awesome.
Yep.
And I just ask him about radio, you know, like not even so much the Mad Dog and Mike and all that stuff. But I just ask him about like, tell me about how to host a sports radio show. So this time he gets up and he goes, you know, Brian, you always want to learn about the radio. You want to learn about the radio. And of course, he's, you know, always happy to talk about the art form that is sports.
He had two phenomenal moments last week. So I didn't listen as intently as I do because I get bored with the guests, but I will check in to see who's on. And if it's a guest, I think could be like, you know, high humor situations. So he had on one guest who was there to promote baked beans. And he was just like, all right, joining me now, I forgot who the player was. He goes, we got to talk baked beans, but first let's get to some football. And it was just the way he does it. And I'm really upset that I wish I would have asked Shelby to get the audio for me because it was hilarious. And he had on another person, Hendon Hooker. That was the one with the baked beans. Then he had another person on who I guess was there. And this is going to make me a horrible person. And please don't hate me for this. But he had someone on, I think, who's there to promote like cancer screenings.
Okay.
And Russo, if you listen to Russo, he uses the word scenario in every sentence and in every possible way. So when he introduced the guest, he's like, and we got to get to the cancer scenario. And it's just, he doesn't try to be funny.
Cancer scenario.
But my God, it's just, it sums up Radio Row. Baked beans and Chris Russo and
cancer scenarios.
The madness is just too much.
Can I tell you the best question I asked him? Or not the best, but
yes, please.
Me most interesting. I said, let's say program director from Dallas walks into the Sirius compound right now, or Tampa, name a city, and goes, Chris, my host is sick. I need you to walk out here. No notes, no nothing. And can you host 1 hour of Dallas sports radio with nothing? He was like, absolutely, I could. Any city in America. And the only thing he said is, if it's a Canadian city, I might, and the hockey might give me some problems. But he could walk in and do 1 hour of any show on Radio Row without any prep.
I believe that. I mean, the guy's been doing it for 40 years. He better know what he's doing, you know.
That's kind of awesome, though, right?
Oh, it's. I listen to him every day, and the places he will go, the things he will talk about, it's. He will break down. Well, he's a diehard Bruce Springsteen fan, like everyone else in sports media, except for me. He'll do a half hour on the set list from the night before. And he knows, he's a savant. He's like, he hasn't done this song in 7 years. And the last time he did it was acoustic. And he interviewed, I'll give you one. He did an interview last week with Bret Michaels of Poison. That was one of the best interviews I've ever heard him do.
Wow.
Because he gets so wrapped up in the music part. He's asking him about, do you pay your band to eat when you're on the road? Like, he just pulls these questions out of his ass. It's tremendous.
Like a per diem kind of thing?
Yeah.
Bret Michaels on Radio Row?
See that? You may have missed him. So from what Russo said, Bret Michaels is supposedly like a huge, serious XM fan. He said he listens to High Heat, Russo's show on MLB Network. And
wow.
What was the other show he said he listened to? But Bret Michaels was there on Radio Row doing the, and I think it was on Friday. It was on Friday.
I am. I was distracted by Fox News' Brian Kilmeade walking around. I must have missed Bret Michaels.
You know, I saw something. Tell me this. When you are there and there's a controversial figure, like someone from Fox News or whatever, among them, do you see friction at all ever between people who are wandering Radio Row?
It obviously has happened before, but here's the thing. It's sports radio.
Right.
What might be controversial to you and me and the people we follow on Twitter maybe
is gold for them.
So controversial on sports radio. Yeah, it's either gold because they embrace it, or they just, it doesn't even process as controversy. It's like, oh, here's the guy.
Right. It's an interesting one. I got pitched someone. I'm like, there's no way I'd ever interview this person. I forgot who it was now. But they're all there in person, so it could lead to some hijinks.
Oh yeah. And that's what
now next year
you hope for, right? I mean, it's not just like your company for 5 minutes.
Now next year, the Super Bowl's in Vegas.
Dude.
Can you even begin to process what that will be like?
I cannot wait. I mean, first of all, Carrot Top is probably going to be back. So he's a resident. But yeah, I'm just excited about everything. First of all, we've not a lot of celebrities on Media Row beyond the sports people. I think that'll change next year. I'm just interested to see who comes next year overall. I mean, I just think it's going to be a totally different vibe, unlike anything we've experienced.
Do you know yet? Has it been determined where Radio Row would be in Vegas? Like, are they going to do it?
I don't know. Usually we get like bottom floor of a convention center. This is not a romantic location, folks. I'm the only one getting very excited about this on a yearly basis. But yeah, you can imagine a casino, perhaps. Maybe it'll be just the Vegas Convention Center. I don't know.
Over under on how many sports media people get arrested during that week in Vegas? Could be a misdemeanor. It doesn't have to be a felony, but
okay.
There's going to be some scandal. Someone's going to get drunk and break into someone's house or do something at a casino, get, you know, a disorderly. There's going to be a disorderly conduct somewhere in there.
So I'm going to put it at, I can't decide if it's 0.5 or 1.5 for the over under.
Yeah.
But I'd say the two factors are it's Vegas. So yes, everything you just said, but also it's Vegas. So there may be a little more latitude on, we're actually putting the cuffs on you right now.
Right. I had not planned on asking you this, and it's probably not fair for me to ask you this, but I'm going to ask you this as the last thing. If you don't want to talk about it, you could say it. I don't care. I've been obsessed with, and I took a little break because it was the Super Bowl, but now I'm going to go back to being obsessed with because it sort of follows on this. This Michael Irvin thing is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in sports media. I'm not asking you to come down and say, you know, he did. But my God, the strangeness of conversation in a hotel lobby. It's on video. NFL Network, ESPN. I don't think they suspend them, but kick them off the air. Send them home. He sues for $100 million. There's no leaks. Now, there was a video that came out Sunday, which I don't know if that's the video in question. I don't know if it's true, so I didn't want to get into that. But there is something way off here, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on. It's a little bit one of those things where people are talking about it, and I don't want to just like repeat things that I do not know to anybody's fairness. I would just say, I think sending him home, to me, the way I read that was, whatever ambiguity has happened here, whatever complaint has happened, let's kick this down the road and not have, Andrew Marshall
cloud hanging on,
Jimmy Tran and Brian Curtis writing about this every day during Super Bowl week. Because the NFL, it's just easier to send him home. But I agree. And when I was looking at this, I was like, is Michael Irvin coming back to NFL Network? I think that's a really big question. I mean, it depends again on what are the actual facts of what happens here. And I feel we only have a really slight hold on that at this point. But I also feel like, Michael Irvin's been somebody who's been on that, line for a long time, right? There've been a lot of things about Michael Irvin going past. He has talked a lot about that stuff, but it's very much in question of whether he would come back to NFL Network.
And like you said, it's a dicey thing to discuss because we don't have the facts, but there have been developments. I mean, so Michael Irvin gets accused of whatever he's been accused with. He gets booted from NFL Network, ESPN, and he does a radio interview. You don't usually, when that happens, your lawyers tell you shut up.
He was keeping his media commitments, yes, for like 24 hours afterwards.
Right.
And talked to the Dallas Morning News, I'm pretty sure.
Yep. And I thought it was interesting when I thought the ESPN part of it was interesting because the initial report was the NFL Network sent him home. Then ESPN did it. And I said to myself, okay, so if maybe they both know something here that, or did ESPN think we're going to look bad if one network booted him and we don't boot him?
I think that's what it is.
Right.
And like I said, I think some of it, I mean, it is a very intriguing situation. I also think there's probably a certain sense of, while we figure out what happens, we need to take you off the air because we just don't want this to be a story all of Super Bowl week.
And Irvin's side of the story, which he went on radio and gave, so I think it's okay for us to discuss, is that this was a 1-minute conversation in a lobby and there's video of it. And it's like, okay, so if there's video of it, how can there be an issue about what, I guess maybe there's no audio, but if it comes out, and we don't know what's going to happen, but if this comes out that Irvin's telling the truth here or Irvin's side is I don't know. The backlash against NFL Network and ESPN, I think, would be severe, but he's suing Marriott and the accuser, not NFL Network and ESPN. So that adds, I think, more confusion to this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And maybe you're hitting on it, right? The ambiguity is in, or ambiguity may be the wrong word, but the controversy, what we need to find out is what was said. And that is, there may be different. He may have a version of that. Somebody else may have a different version of that. That might be the question.
And then the other part I just find interesting is that in this day and age, everything sort of leaks and the accuser side really hasn't leaked. So I guess he didn't have to, nothing leaked on him because he went on radio and gave his entire side of the story, which was an interesting move.
An interesting choice for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on day after the Super Bowl.
Of course.
Really enjoyed the insight here. And you have to rest up from 6 days on Radio Row. So
oh my gosh, I know. Yeah. I have to just unplug for a while. But again, when I woke up this morning, I was like, I kind of want to hear about sports radio, about the game, they're treating the game. So I'm an addict.
See, I normally like that too. I just, like, I'll put on Russo at 3 o'clock. I can't listen to 3 hours of the refs and the call. That gets tedious. Like, I'll give you give me 10 minutes on that and I'll move on. But I don't, that can't just be the whole thing, because then that just gets.
Get up this morning. It's like, well, it's so unfortunate we have to talk about the calls. Like, do we really have to? Can we just do one segment on this and talk about other stuff?
Again, that scramble by Mahomes has gotten totally lost in the shuffle.
It has. Mahomes is awesome on that last year. Andy Reid being awesome for an entire half of football and destroying the Eagles defense.
I don't know how anyone could root against Andy Reid. I just don't.
Did you like when he took the glasses off?
Yeah.
Like after the games, like, I no longer wear glasses. Whoop. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. He's one of the characters, so we need those. All right, Brian, appreciate it as always, and we'll see you down the road. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Jimmy.
All right, bye-bye. All right, my thanks to Brian Curtis for coming on this bonus episode of SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Appreciate him jumping on and giving us some fantastic insight, as he always does. We'll have another episode of the SI Media Pod later this week. And if you missed any recent episodes, dip into the archives and check them out. Richard Deitch from The Athletic was on the podcast last week. Chris Berman, ESPN legend, 2 weeks ago. Jason McCourty from Good Morning Football, 3 weeks ago. Give them a listen. Subscribe to the pod. Rate and review on Apple as well. We're going to read reviews on an episode coming up with Sal in Train of Thoughts, and he'll be back with us on Thursday as well. All right. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you later this week right here on SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Stay safe and take care.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.